Let's slowly get started. Homework 2 has been given. Homework 2, where are homework? So first of all, homework 1 solutions are there. I'm going to add, I think, one other, the extra problem solution I forgot to add. I'll do that. And homework 2. I have most of the problems there already, and it's likely to be due in about 2 weeks. I haven't yet formally closed it, but you, I think if you start working on this, all the stuff in it has already been done. It's all A-star search and various other things. And then part B is a certain type of question that I am fond of asking on limited time examinations, so you might want to check how you do with those things. Okay. The other thing is that, I don't know what happened to the reading list. So we'll be mostly still doing the planning chapter from the textbook, but some of the discussion today might be easier if you again, I mean, if you want to read more about the sorts of planning graph heuristics, you could look up that paper and the first 5 sections of that paper. That's just an optional reading. You don't need to, but if you want, you can do that. Okay. Are there any questions? No questions? Okay. So do people sort of buy that there is a difference between planning and general search? What? But then why did you not say anything when I said, do you have any questions? I mean, I think people don't ask questions, then I'll assume that 100% transfer has occurred. Because I can't assume anything else. So I think it should be tricky to make the distinction between planning and heuristic search, and you should ask that question. I would have liked, in fact, only one person came and asked me, and we had a long discussion. I would assume that several of you should have that question, you know, but if you don't ask, I'll assume that you got it. It's fine. Okay. Try to see, again, the main point I was making is at the heuristic search level, you don't make any assumptions about the insights of a state. You don't care about the structure of a state. State is a black box. Okay. Now you might say, whereas in these models, in these planning models, you are making the assumption that the state has a structure. A state is defined in terms of a finite number of state variables. Now you might think that that's not a huge restriction, okay? In fact, it is the case that most problems that we have seen, such as 8 puzzle problems, can actually be written such that they will have a state variable representation, okay? However, the idea is that if you know for sure that the state variable representation is available, then you can start writing, you can start making heuristics which can depend upon that representation, as we'll see today. Okay. In general, so the example that I was suggesting to somebody, let me admit that it's not crystal clear at the first hearing as to what is the difference between search and planning. Okay, so you have to ask this question multiple times to yourself, and hopefully as today's class goes on, you'll have more reasons to believe that there is a distinction. Okay, now sometimes there could be a distinction while every problem that you know of that can be solved by the search space method can also be solved by this method. And still it's a distinction. So the example that I was trying to provide to somebody who was asking me this was, for example, you could have 2 different combinatorial substrates. Unfortunately, I don't know how many people know, for example, propositional logic versus integer programming. Okay, it turns out that everything that can be done in integer programming can be ultimately done in propositional logic, satisfiability, and vice versa. Except there are certain techniques that make a lot more sense if you happen to know that the constraints are of the linear inequality form versus the constraints are of clausal form. Okay, so you in the models that we look at here, we don't have to ask ourselves what does the state look like. We know that state is made up of state variables with their values. And then starting from that, we'll see what can we do in terms of heuristics. Okay? And we'll also see what makes such problems easier versus harder. You'll notice, for example, we'll talk about things like sub-goals, independence of sub-goals, dependence of sub-goals, etc., which are much easier to talk about once you agree that the states have this kind of a state variable structure, which you couldn't when you did not make any assumptions about state. All you know was states can be read by child generator function, which will generate new state, and a goal test function, which will say yes or no. Okay, so you're making an extra commitment as to the representation. Okay. Other questions? I mean, I in general would like people to have questions. I am assuming that there should be enough things that come up in the class that if you at all care and think about it afterwards, you should have questions. And so I'm perpetually surprised at how effective I am in either intimidating you into not asking questions or making 100% transfer. So I'd like to see more questions. Okay. Anything else? Yes, I mean, you'll see that's possibly an idea, and you can actually also see it's a question of I know for sure that the states have state variable representation. So what can I do given that? Okay, and you'll see some of the things we'll talk about today couldn't have been done as easily in normal problem-solving model. Okay, in particular, something as simple as doing backward search, regression search, would require you to rewrite the child generator function in many scenarios. Whereas, if you have a state variable-based model, you'll notice that you can go forward, backward, and you can also go start from the middle, add actions into the plan and just make the plan direct. Okay. So we were talking about the idea of going forward, and then that was the progression search. And I mentioned that, so I'll leave that thing there. That's your action description. So in the state variable model, a problem is specified by providing initial state and goal state. Okay. Now, initial and a state, a complete state is specified by providing the values of all the state variables. Okay. If there is a state variable whose value is not specified in the initial state, that means you could be in any one of the states for various values of that particular variable. So, for example, if I have 5 Boolean variables, and I only know for sure the current values in my current state of the first 3. Okay, so I have 2 missing. I don't know the values of those. Then I really don't know which actual state I am in. I am in 1 of 4 possible states corresponding to the possible values of the missing variables. Okay, and the same thing for the goal. In the goal, essentially, so in a complete initial state, you will assume that the simplest problem is you know exactly what the initial state is. So we'll assume that we will write the values of all the state variables. Now, one simple syntactic thing we can do is, since anyway initial state is complete, okay, if you are thinking of Boolean variables, then you can say, I will only list the variables which are true. And then everything else that I did not list is by definition false. Do you understand what I'm saying? So this is a convention. As long as you know, as long as we all understand that we are talking about complete state. And if you have 15 state variables, every state is a true-false assignment of over these 15 variables. Okay? So if I can always tell you what a state is by just telling you what are the values, what are the variables that are true in that state, that basically means all the others are false. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that somehow I think the value true is somehow nice compared to the value false. Okay? It's just two values. You could have actually had much of whatever I'm discussing here could also work if the state variables are multi-valued. That means they have values 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to 10, let's say. Okay? But in those cases, of course, this kind of a syntactic thing cannot be done. You actually have to say, to give the actual complete description of a state, you have to say variable 1 has value 1, variable 2 has value 7, variable 3 has value 9, and so on. If a variable can only be true or false, then you can always just say, I'll list the true ones, and by definition, all the other ones are false. Okay? So in this particular case, actually, I said clear A, clear B, etc. So for example, I didn't say anything about on AB in the initial state. So what is its value? On AB is false by our definition because it's supposed to be a complete state. So if and it only just talks about the true one, so the all other ones are false by definition. Now the other question is, what are my goals? My goals here are, in the goals you care about, you only talk about those state variables that you do care about and the values that you want them to have. So goal state by definition can be partial. And as I said earlier, in the beginning of the class too, having partial goal state is normally a good thing because that means there are many, many complete states of the world which satisfy your goals. Okay? So if there are, let's say, 10 state variables and you only care about two of the state variables, then in essence what you're saying is up to 2 power 8 states can be goal states. Up to 2 power 8 states can be goal states. Because 10 variables, I only care about specific values of two of them, the others can take any values. So up to 2 power 8 states can be goal states. So that's what I'm saying in this, by using this. Okay, so right away we start thinking about initial state being complete, goal state being partial. And now the other interesting thing actually is just as long as we are there, let's see. Okay, so you should look at this slide, which I did not go through very carefully last time, but it's been repeated many times before. In general, if you have k Boolean variables, there will be 2 power k complete states. If there are k Boolean variables, there can be 2 power k complete states. Okay? Now, if you have k state variables and you define goals only in terms of by just listing those variables whose values you care about, how many distinct goal states can you have? How many distinct goal specifications can you have? 3 power k. It's not 2 power k, it's 3 power k. Because it's 2 power k for the complete initial state, because in a given state, a variable can be true or false. Now, in the goal state, a variable can be listed as true, listed as false, are not listed at all. That means you don't care about it. Okay? So in fact, you have to realize that, we'll call this goal state, but we know that goal state really is a set of complete states. And even if you are considering goal states of this form where individual state variables whose values you care about are listed, there are 3 power k goals, possible goal states, and only 2 power k possible complete states. Okay, keep that in the back of your mind because we will start getting into interesting combinatoric issues because of that. Okay. So, progression, I talked about how you can start from a state and do an action to get the next state, which is a pretty obvious one. So you take, in this case, pickup A, you look at the pickup A, check whether whatever it says the state variables must have is true in the state where you are trying to apply it. So this is actually schematized. So for X, you can put any value. Okay, so it's pickup A would become hand empty, clear A on table A. Hand empty, clear A on table A are true. Okay, so I get to do pickup A, and when I do pickup A, all I know is whatever else happens, definitely these variables will have these values because this action forces them to, it clamps them to have certain values. Okay, so you just go ahead and say, in this case, so holding A, not clear A, not on table A, not hand empty. I wrote them down. Okay, having written them down, then every other variable from here, which isn't listed in pink, that means this action doesn't care about the value of that variable. Just copy it over. Whatever it had before, it would have now. Okay, this essentially is the way you define the state fall, you know, going from one state to another. So algebraic manipulation makes a lot of sense. Okay. And then, of course, having made this, now you can go ahead and say, now this is a complete state. Because this is a complete state, you can actually again remove, if you're telling to somebody what your state is, you can remove this, this, and this. Because the negative ones, you don't have to say. Right? If you start from a complete state, you do an action, you will get a complete state. And in the complete state, if you have a convention that in a complete state, I'll only tell you the positive one, the true one, then I can actually, in this particular case, the real state is, the way you write the state is holding A on table B, clear B. Which means those are true, everything else is false. Okay? And the same way. And, you know, this algebraic manipulation is the only thing that you need to write. So you would now have a generic children generator function which takes actions of this form and applies them one by one and generates children nodes. And now that child generator function would work as long as every domain is described in terms of these kinds of actions. So you don't need to change it based on the problem anymore. All you need is you just define the problem in this formulation and then you get to use that state, that particular child generator. Okay. So the other thing that we mentioned towards the end of the class is that you could do this in the, so anyway, one other thing is that when do we stop? We stop when whatever are your goal variable assignments are present in one of the states that you pick for expansion. Okay. In this case, neither of these have not clear B and hand empty together. Okay. And one thing, it actually thinking of goal state this way, one thing that makes us think of is this is one sub-goal, this is one sub-goal. I need to make this and this both true together. Okay. And that actually brings up the issue of whether sub-goals are dependent on each other. That means when you're trying to make one true, would the other, which is already true, become false? Or would it be the case that in trying to make one true, the other you already almost make it true? Or is it the case that whatever you do on this goal has no connection to what you do on this goal? Like what I just said now are three different properties between sub-goals. One is negative interactions. That means trying to make a progress on one sub-goal undoes any progress you made on the other sub-goal. Okay? The other one is positive interactions. That means in trying to make this sub-goal true, somehow you wind up making this sub-goal true too. And then independent, what you do on this sub-goal has no connection to this sub-goal. Okay? And those wind up making a difference because, as I said towards the end of last class, if you have two states and you know that neither of them are goal states, the question is which is closer to the goal state. Now, closeness is defined in terms of how many actions you need to take from these states to get to the goal state. Okay? And you're trying to get an estimate on that. And I gave you one simple estimate, which is just count the number of sub-goals that are present, that are not present in the current state. That can be thought of as the cost of that state. Okay? So by that measure, this has one missing, right? Because it has hand empty is false, and you want hand empty. And it also has clear B should be false, and so it has two missing. So this guy's cost is 2. And what about this guy's cost? This guy's cost is 1. So according to your approach, you would go forward on this. That's a cost. Okay, that's a heuristic function. It's an estimate. Now, in this case, I hope you remember that the correct plan for this problem is what? Pick up A, stack A on B. Pick up A, stack A on B. So just now I showed you that the heuristic that I just told you is called the set difference heuristic. It acts as if the goal is a set, the current state is a set, and it takes the difference between that set and this set. Set difference. And take the cardinality of that. You can do that. Okay? Except I just told you that set difference heuristic is actually going to put you in this path rather than this one. There are lots and lots of problems with set difference heuristics. One problem, of course, is it assumes that each missing sub-goal is just as hard as any other missing sub-goal. And that was the example that I gave you last class about if you have two sub-goals, one is have $1 million, another, you know, have a pair of socks. Presumably, I'll think have $1 million is a much costlier sub-goal, much harder to achieve sub-goal than have a pair of socks. Okay, and yet, this kind of a heuristic would consider both in a state where you have a pair of socks but no $1 million to be one distance away from the goal state, and similarly it will consider a state where you have a pair of socks but no $1 million also as one distance away from the goal state. Okay, but it's easy to compute. It's extremely cheap to compute the set difference heuristic. As long as we're here, tell me whether set difference heuristic is admissible. Is set difference heuristic admissible? Remember that when I talk about cost, first thing you have to ask is what is the cost supposed to be? What's the perfect cost? The perfect cost I'm asking here is the number of actions I have to do from this state to go to the goal state. Number of actions I have to do from this state to go to the goal state. Is set difference admissible? The set difference heuristic has to be a lower bound on the perfect cost. And it's not, right? Because here, actually, this guy is just one distance away from the goal state. You can understand that. You do one more action, you'll be in the goal state. And yet, this guy says the cost is 2. You need just one example for something to be inadmissible. Okay? So, apart from all the other problems, set difference heuristic is also inadmissible. Okay? It's nice to know that. Okay? Now, it's also pretty darned ill-informed. As I said, it could basically consider that, you know, a goal which is actually 10,000 steps away, you know, would be seen as just as costly as a goal which is only a step away. If all that matters is one literal missing. So that was the example of socks versus $1 million. Okay, so it can be made arbitrarily ill-informed. So it can be, at the same time, it can very badly underestimate the heuristic and yet sometimes overestimate the real cost. And so it's both not very good, not very well informed, and it's also inadmissible. Okay. Before we look for better heuristic, let's try to use the extra flexibility we have with the representation to try doing different kinds of search. We went forward in the previous one. Suppose I want to go backward. Suppose I want to act as if I'll start with the goal state, come back. So I want to somehow do the actions in the backward direction. Okay. Now, actions have physical significance. When you actually do them in the world, you can only do them in the forward direction. But search is in your head. Search is not in the real world, it's in your head. You're simulating. So in simulating, you can always simulate what would happen if the action were to be done in either the forward or in the backward direction. Okay? So in particular, I will actually try to say, start from this and try to consider all the states that can be reached from here backward. Now, how would I do that? Suppose I do, let's say, put down A as one of the actions I'm considering. Okay? So the issue is, if put down A is the very last action done just before this state, what must be the properties that put down A must have? Let's just think, you know, you don't need to know too much about planning to understand that if this is the very last action that you're doing, and if one of the effects of this last action wind up being opposing what you need, then you are in deep trouble, right? Do you guys agree that? Because this is the, if I'm considering doing this action in the reverse direction, that means this is the last action before you reach the goal state. If this is the last action, it better be the case that its effects are not opposing any of the required goals. If they are opposing, then you have an inconsistency, because when you do this action, those effects will take precedence, and so you would get to a state which is actually opposing your goal. That's first point. Okay? And so the point one is, you can do an action in the backward direction from a state if there is no variable V such that V is given a value, the V is given different values by this action and by the goal state. Okay, so if suppose this guy said clear B should be true and this guy says clear B should be false, then this can't be the last action. That's all I'm saying. Very simple. Okay, that's the first thing. The second, of course, is if you're doing this action, I mean, it better have some use, right? It better do something. I mean, why is it part of the plan? It must be because it's giving at least one of the sub-goals. Otherwise, what's the point in having it? Okay? So the second requirement is there exists at least one variable V dash such that V dash is given the same value by the action and the state. Okay? So this corresponds to do no harm. And this corresponds to do at least something useful. Okay? And if you ignore this, you can have a search which would be unsound. That means you will give solutions which don't even work. If you ignore this, you won't be unsound. It'll just, you will have plans which have actions that aren't really doing anything. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so if you don't try this, then you would have what are called non-minimal plans. That means there are actions in the plan which have no real use. If you remove them, the plan could still work. Whereas if you remove this, God help you, because you'll start saying, I'm done, here is a plan, it doesn't work. Okay? So those are the two requirements. These take the place of, in the progression, remember, before an action can be applied, we check that the preconditions of the action are holding in the state. That was the applicability condition in the forward direction. This is the applicability condition in the reverse direction for the same action. I did not change the action. These were given the way they are given. Okay. All I'm changing is the way I generate the children with respect to the same exact action description. Okay. So, having done this, now if those two conditions are satisfied, I get to do this action. Now, of course, the question is, what is the child? If this is the last action, then what would be the state before this? All we know is, for this guy to be, so whatever is the state here, this guy better be doable from that state. Right? So all of its preconditions must be present in this state. Furthermore, whatever this guy is not giving among these sub-goals should be given by somebody else. So you say, hey, look, I didn't take care of that sub-goal, so I'll throw this here, so somebody else who comes before me will take care of it. Simple algebra. There's no magic here. Okay. So all I'm going to say is that the new state now is computed as every variable that occurs in the preconditional list of this action will be copied over into this state with that value. And every variable which has a value here that is not present in the effects of this guy will be copied here. You already know that it will never be the case that the variable will have a value here, but the effect actually mentions that variable but with a negative value. Because if that was the case, I wouldn't even have considered it for application. Okay? This is now, you can just do this mechanically. So put down A will get you not clear B and holding A. The holding A part of it comes because putting down requires a precondition holding. And not clear B part comes because put down A gives you hand empty, if you remember. Putting down something gives you hand empty. So the hand empty is the part that this guy is giving. The one thing that's left, not clear B, you give it to your predecessor to work on. Yes, sir. That's because you are away. That's a very good point. Wait for a second. Okay, I mean, I showed this example, 6 times till now in different classes, and this is the first time somebody actually said it before I asked. And so that's pretty good. So you're good with lock. Okay. So here is a state. Okay. Now, stack AB, the state would be this for the same regression. Okay. And then put down B. Should I be having an action corresponding to put down B? No, because if I do put down B, I will get clear B. But I want not clear B. So you're doing harm. So you would not even put this action into this space. Okay? This is regression, by the way. This is called regression. The other one is called progression. This is called regression. Now, the question of, so basically for every action here, you go through the list of actions trying to see whether they're applicable, if so, generate the state that would occur before. Okay? Now, the interesting thing, of course, is remember that the goal state is actually a partial state. That means goal state corresponds to a set of complete states. Now, whenever you think of a set of complete states, the set can be empty set. And that's what this guy was pointing out, that it basically in this particular case, in this world, in the block world that we currently have, you can think a bit and realize that there is no state. Given these actions and given this initial state, there is no legal state of the world where B is not clear and A is being held. This is true in other domains, but when you only have two blocks and those actions, this is actually dead. You don't see that it's dead. You will try to go forward on this, or go backward on this. Okay? So, if you have some nice way of figuring out that this is dead, you would have killed it. And so, you would have avoided making search on this. One very important thing in search is, if you can easily tell that a node is dead, you want to kill it. The failing nodes are better dead now than later, because if they're not dead now, then they'll beget children, who will then beget children, who will then beget children, and so one dead node will correspond to a huge, exponentially large subtree, all of which are dead. And the search algorithm is happily going between them. Now, if in fact I did not check this, would I have, so there is a question of doing too much search, but there's a question of stopping with the wrong solution. Those are two different things. In this class, I will still, all of us will agree that soundness is important. If you stop and say, here is a solution, and the solution is not a solution, then people are going to laugh at you. Okay? So the question is, if I did not kill this state, how would it be, is it possible that I might actually wind up, going through this direction and somehow get a solution, which would be a bogus solution? The answer is no. The answer is no. And now, but for that, you have to first ask, when are you going to stop? What's your termination condition? Okay, you didn't ask me that. Progression, you know the termination condition. Termination condition in the progression is, if you get a state that you're about to expand and it has the goal variable having the values they need in that state, then you can stop. That's the goal state. What is it for the regression? Initial state. So this is really, think of this as in the progression, the initial state is going forward and forward and forward. So it's like a surrogate of the initial state which is going forward. When the surrogate basically has goals ready, then it sends a shock back to the initial state saying I have made contact. And the same thing is happening here in the opposite direction. So it's the surrogate of the goal state which is going backward and backward and backward. And it gets to touch earth when what if you are looking for. So in essence what you are saying is one way of making not clear B and hand empty true is to do put down A as the last action and before that get these things true. And if you can get these things true, then I know how to go from there to there. So if I ever can get to a state where I'm looking for variables to have certain values, and the initial state already guarantees that those variables have those values, you stop. Okay? Now, having said this, I can also do bidirectional search. I can start from the initial state, make the surrogate initial states go forward in the progression direction, start from the goal state and make surrogate goal states go backward, and if any one of these guys finds that whatever he needs is present in any one of these guys, you're done. So there's contact from the initial to goal state and you're done. Okay, it's always the case that the termination condition says that the goal state or the surrogate goal state, whatever it requires, is present in the initial state or the surrogate initial state. And the surrogate is the word I'm just made up to talk about the initial state, the state that has that was reached from the initial state by doing legal action. Okay, yes, sir.
But will that method necessarily give you an optimal?
No. Because termination conditions never give you optimal paths. Optimal paths are given by search algorithm. And if you are using admissible heuristic, you will get optimal path. If not, you won't. Okay? So again, so this is a layer on top of everything else we already learned. You know, optimality wasn't a problem, optimality was not a property of the child generator function. It was not a property of the termination function. It was only the property of the way the search algorithm behaves. And if you're doing a star search, then the way you'll get optimality is to get admissible heuristic. Yes?
I want to check whether it's
what do you mean? I understand. No, when I terminate, I have a correct solution. You don't have to check whether it's correct or not anymore. If you follow my steps, so if you only expand the initial state by using actions that are applicable in those states, and if you only expand the goal state by using actions in the reverse directions that are applicable in that state, and if one of those guys from here make a contact with one of these guys from here, then the path is the plan. I guarantee you. Okay, there's no question. Okay? Now my question is the following. Before still going to the heuristic, suppose I get to do either just forward or just backward. Which should I be picking? What do you think? Suppose I have pretty much the same heuristic, you know, maybe set difference heuristic sort of a thing. Or I don't even have a good heuristic. Okay, just blind search. And I have provided two ways of looking at the search space, either going backward or going forward. Which is better? Why is forward better? Yes? Okay. Okay. So from that point of view, it looks like, I mean, this class is kind of opposite of every other class I taught. So this is a good point, except most of the time people see this point as a second point. So the point that you're saying is forward state, at least you have a complete state. But think about the following thing. When I get up in the morning, okay, I have a goal to be at a particular meeting at 5 o'clock in the evening. If I'm forward search, I will say, okay, now I'm sitting up on my bed, I'm saying, what are all the things can I do right now, sitting on the bed? Well, I can actually you know, jump on the bed, I can get out of the bed, I can go into this room, that room, various other rooms. There are like 10,000 things I can do from there. From each of those things, I can do another 10,000 things. Okay? So the branching factor going forward versus branching factor going backward. How does that compare? Huge difference. One of the interesting things is, assuming that since the solution length is about the same, you know, if both of them are doing basically admissible search, the optimal solution length is the same. Okay? So in essence, they both are doing some d power d search, where d is the optimal solution length. I just gave you an example where I said the b for regression search can be arbitrarily smaller compared to the progression search. And this is true even in this simple world. All I need to do is just increase the number of irrelevant blocks that are hanging about. Keep putting more and more and more and more blocks. And then in the forward direction, you can play all sorts of games with all the kinds of blocks, but all you really care about is these. And remember that heuristic could tell you which direction to go. But I said, if you didn't have heuristic, in essence, I'm messing with your mind because, in essence, I'm saying, well, there is a reason to believe that progression is better, and there is a reason to believe that the regression is better. If you don't have heuristic. Okay, so these are the reasons to think progression. So from the progression point of view, it has a higher branching factor. Regression has a lower branching factor. So that looks like advantage regression. But on the other hand, progression searches in the state of complete and consistent states. Regression searches in the space of partial states. And there are only 2 power k states here, there are 3 power k states here. In fact, regression is searching in a larger space, believe it or not. Okay? So depending on how these two things wind up working, in fact progression could be better or regression could be better in your specific problem. All I want you to understand is that it's not as obvious as one might have thought. However, I think most people tend to think that regression is actually, one of the other points is regression is goal directed. That means the search itself is starting from the goal, thinking constantly about what the goal wants and making the branching based on that. And in general, it's hard to say goal directed search is worse than non-goal directed search. It's kind of hard to say. So this is the point where it looks still as if maybe regression could do well. Okay. And I already pointed out about this bidirectional search business. Right. The question, of course, is this whole discussion about who is better is irrelevant if you know exactly what direction to go. Okay? If you know exactly what direction to go, it doesn't really matter how big your branching factor is. If you are progression and you have 10,000 directions you can go, but you have an oracle, or I call rich uncle, who says, thou shalt go in a direction north east, and then you go there. Okay? Now, who is your rich uncle in search? Heuristic. Okay? If you have a great heuristic, then its branching factor is for losers. Okay? People who have no good heuristic will actually be affected by the branching factor. If you have perfect heuristic, it doesn't matter how many bad things are there, you know, you just go directly in the right direction. So it's a heuristic which kind of thinks about goal-directedness. So the branching itself is going in a non-goal-directed fashion, but then the heuristic is at every point pushing the search to take those branches that actually go to the goal. So it becomes goal-directed search ultimately. Okay? Yes, sir. Yes, except these. Notice that all I'm doing, I'm not inverting arbitrary functions. I'm inverting these kinds of actions, these, right here. And there's no hardness in that particular case. Okay? Now, and also, it's different, I hope you understand that it's different from doing the action, I mean, doing an opposite action after a given action. So, for example, take an action called bomb the table in the blocks world. bomb the table, bombs the table. So all the blocks are gone, you are also possibly gone. Okay? Now, you cannot actually try to do the reverse of bomb the table. If you do bomb, that's it. You can never get out of the state that results from bombing. In execution. In thinking, who cares? We can consider what happens if I were to do the bomb action in the forward or the backward direction. So when I'm doing these actions, I can do, in the search, I can consider what happens if this action is done in the backward direction, which is different from reversibility of an action in the real world. Bombing does not normally have reversibility. Stacking, on the other hand, has a reversibility. If you stack A and B by mistake, you unstack A from B. That's a reversible action. Bomb, non-reversible. Okay? So it's very important to understand the distinction between reversibility in the execution and direction of search. Ultimately, irrespective of whether you use regression or progression, you do the plan, you execute the plan in the forward direction. That's the only way you execute. It's just that you made it coming back or made it go forward. One of the other interesting things that this discussion brings up, and I'll just sort of mention it a little bit probably, is I sort of said that you could either, since the only thing that matters is the plan, and once the plan, which is actually a sequence of actions, in this particular case the sequence of actions, the correct sequence is what? Pick up A, followed by stack AB. That's the plan. Okay? When you have that plan, you execute, this is the first action, this is the second action. If you're doing progression, you would have constructed this plan by first constructing this piece, then adding this piece. If you're doing regression, you would have constructed this piece first, then adding this piece. Now, it's a two-step plan in this scenario, so it's really either you have to construct it from the forward or the backward. If you have a three-step plan, you could have constructed the plan by putting the middle step first, then putting the first step, then putting the third step. It doesn't matter how you came to the correct plan, as long as you came to the correct plan. Okay? If you think in terms of what happens to the plan itself in the progression, you are computing prefix plans. So, in each path in the progression tree corresponds to a prefix of a final plan. And you're making a bet that this particular actions would be the prefix of a winning plan in the progression tree. In the regression tree, you're making a bet that this particular set of actions, sequence of actions would be the suffix of a winning plan. From the plan point of view. Now, why do you care only about prefix and suffixes? Why can't I think in terms of upstrings? Okay? Why can't I directly start with an empty plan? Why can't I start with an empty plan, which means there is no actions right now, and see if I'm done? If not, keep adding actions until I'm done. And the actions that are being added can be added in any order with respect to each other. So how could I do that with this particular problem? So, for example, I would say the following. I need not clear B, and I need, what else, hand empty. Those are my goals. And I know what my initial state is. I'll just put a picture here so you know, it's easier. I don't have to write everything. That's my initial state. Now, let's assume in the beginning that I don't know what the plan is, so let's assume my plan is null. The question is it a correct plan? It's not. If it's not, what's wrong with it? What makes it a not correct plan? Now, if you're wondering why the heck am I thinking like this, think of what I did with 8 queens problem. I know what the solution is for the 8 queens problem. I don't know how to get it. What would I do? I'll take a board and put queens randomly, one per column, and see if it's a solution. If it is, I'm done. If not, I'll ask, why exactly aren't you a solution? And I'm not a solution because of the following flaws in my character. You know, in the case of 8 fields, my flaws would be that, look, I and this other guy are conflicting, this guy and this guy are conflicting, this guy and this guy are conflicting. And if only these flaws are removed, I would be a goal. So, what can I say for this null plan? What are the flaws of this null plan? The flaws of this null plan ultimately are that nobody seems to be supporting clear B, not clear B. Nobody is giving not clear B. Somebody has to give it. Nobody is giving it right now. And somebody has to give hand empty. And it actually, it's possible that hand empty, and right now nobody has committed to giving hand empty either. Two things need to be done. Nobody is doing it. Obviously, there's a problem. So I would say my flaws are, I will actually act as if this is a step in the plan called S infinity, which is the very last step in the plan. I'll act as if this is really a dummy plan with S0 corresponding to the initial state and S infinity corresponding to the goal state, followed by, and in the middle there is nothing. Okay? Now this would have been a plan if everything that S infinity needs is already given by somebody. Okay? Now currently nobody is giving not clear B, nobody is giving hand empty. So I have two flaws, I would call these open conditions. What? No, right now I haven't yet committed. It's a good way of, so the idea is, I haven't said that, so the plan, this plan is different from a plan which says S0, S infinity, and there is a commitment that S0 gives hand empty to S infinity. Okay? You'll see why that's important, because you would have to remember what commitments you made. You know, this is like actually the way you guys do planning. You know, if you're trying to do some wedding planning or something, you'll say, okay, so you're going to get, the, I mean, party, I mean, most of the time you guys don't have wedding planning, but, you know, so you're going to get the Coke, right, and you're going to get the, whatever, the big beer keg or something, and, you know, various people have made commitments. Just because your friend has a beer keg in his home doesn't necessarily mean that they'll bring it to you, which is exactly what's happening here. You know, hand empty is true in the initial state, but that may not actually be a commitment to get you hand empty to the goal state. And making a commitment then will require that the friend doesn't start drinking from that keg before the party. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because that's an important thing. Okay? So until I make the commitment, I have two open conditions. Open condition one is not clear B must be true at S infinity. And the open condition two is hand empty must be true at S infinity. I'll act as if these are two different commitments, and I'm looking for suckers who would make commitments for this. Okay? Now normally what happens? A friend of yours would say, yeah, I'll get you a beer keg, and then say, okay, I put you down for beer keg, and then he can say, you know, don't you know that I don't have a car? Okay, so how am I going to get the keg in my head? And then you say, oh, I'll call this other friend who does have a car, get him to give you a ride so that you can buy the beer keg and bring it to you. So having when somebody makes a commitment to get you a goal, they might then require certain other things to be made true for them. And then it's yours. If you want your party to go well, you better plan for this whole thing. Okay? So in this particular case, and I'm talking obviously about non-alcoholic beer. Okay? So so in this case, I would say not clear B. So let's consider a scenario. So I'll pick one open condition, whichever. Pick one. Which do you want to work on first? What? Which one? Hand empty? Okay? So hand empty, you have to look at each of these actions and see who could have given hand empty in their effect. This guy can't. This guy can. This guy can. This guy can't. So any stack XY action and any put down X action would give it. So really what I need to do is I have to generate multiple branches, one corresponding to each one of those actions giving hand empty, plus one extra branch corresponding to hand empty coming from S0. So it's like saying either I would use the beer that's already at home, or I will buy it at 7-Eleven, or I'll buy it at Safeway, or I'll buy it at some other place. And for each of these commitments, you have various sub-goals. So you're going to use it from your home, you know, you don't have to buy it anymore. If you have to buy it from Safeway, then you have to go to Safeway. Okay? So anyway, let's consider making hand empty true from here to here. This is one search branch. I made that commitment in that search branch. There are other search branches where I could consider doing hand empty in different ways. Now what do I do? In this case, this fly is disappeared. It's no longer a fly because somebody is giving it. Furthermore, the guy who is giving it is an easy to please guy. He doesn't require anything back in return. It's the initial state. Okay, so this action doesn't have any more preconditions. So I'll give you a hand empty and I don't require anything back in return. Okay, very nice guy. And now I just need to get not clear B at S infinity. So who are all the guys who can give me not clear B at S infinity? Initial state cannot give it. Okay, so remember that you know, starting from the original plan, null, I had to consider all possible ways of the word is establishing an open condition. And there are all these ways, and I picked one of these branches corresponding to establishing this hand empty from the initial state. And now I'm expanding it further to consider how to resolve the other conflict. Yes. Yes. Wait. So that's a very good point. So in fact, what we're doing here, one of the interesting things, I mean, underneath it all, the idea is, given a plan, how would you check that it's a correct plan? Suppose I gave you a solution for this problem. How would you check it? There, it turns out, are three fundamentally different ways of checking correctness of a plan. And each way of checking a correctness corresponds to a way of inverting the correctness check to do the search. One first way is, do the first action, second action, third action, all the way to the last action, and see if the final state has all the goals true. That's one way of checking. If you believe in that way of checking the correctness of the plan, then you would invert it, you do progression search. Another way of checking it is, start from the last action, do the last action in the goal state, get the state before that, do the next to last action, get the state before that, and see if you reach the initial state. Okay? That's another way of checking. Those two already we inverted them, we got a progression and a regression. And a third way of checking it is called causal proof. By the way, I'll add slides for all of this later on into the thing. So the third way of checking it is called causal proof, which is exactly what we are informally talking about when talking about this party planning. Okay? So if you need certain things to be done, for everything that needs to be done, somebody has committed that they will do it. And whoever has committed, they may require certain things that need to be done before them. And so for them too, somebody else has committed that they will do those. So for every precondition of every action in the plan, including the preconditions of the goal state, which are basically the goals, there is some action which has committed to making that condition true. Furthermore, during that commitment, so from the place where, suppose this is the guy who is committing to make this true, there is no action in the plan which comes between the guy who is giving and the guy who is taking and kills the commitment. That's it. So for every condition in the plan, I just need to prove that the condition is established. And the established means somebody gives it and nobody who can come in between, who is coming in between, deletes it. This is a different way of proving the correctness of a plan. Okay? And I actually argue that however baroque it looks, oftentimes we look at large plans in our own lives and prove the correctness to ourselves in that way. So is there somebody who is doing this thing? And are we sure that nobody is undoing what it is that these guys are trying to do? But if every condition in the plan, these are true, then I can guarantee that the plan is correct. So there are three equivalent ways of proving correctness. And for every way of proving correctness, you can invert the correctness and do search. So now what I'm doing here is I'm inverting the causal proof. So I'm trying to construct a structure where the causal proof will say that you are, by construction, that that you are right, you are a correct plan. Okay, that's all I'm trying to do. So up to here I came, and then the next thing is I still have not clear B at S infinity as the open condition. That's a flaw. Okay, so what do? I have to pick somebody who is giving not clear B. Let's pick the right guy. You know, act as if we know. So of course, you know, you look at again all these places and see who are all the guys who can give not clear. This guy can give not clear, and this guy cannot. This guy cannot. This guy can. So if you are looking for not clearness, this is just syntax. I don't even know about the domain. All I'm doing is looking pattern matching. I want not clear. This guy says not clear. This guy says not clear. So these are the only two actions that I can use to provide a not clearness. In this case. So any of these three actions can be used, and for each of those actions there's a branch corresponding to that action giving not clear B. Now, since the initial state is not giving not clear B, the establishment from the initial state is not a possibility. All of them together. So it must be the case that, again, these are conjunctive goals. So these goals must all be true. So one way of doing it is work on each of them, but while working on one, you better not undo the progress you made on the other. That's what we are doing right now. So what will we do? We will actually, let's pick the guy who actually gives not clear B in this problem. You know the solution, and you know that one branch would correspond to stack AB. So I introduce stack AB into the plan. Now where should it be? Should it be the first action, second action, third action, 15th action? I don't care. All I care is it comes sometime after the beginning of the plan and sometime before the end of the plan. This is a beautiful thing because you no longer are thinking about prefixes and suffixes. You're saying this is present in the plan somewhere. This is the way we do the planning too. I mean, like when you said, oh, this friend will get me the, you know, beer, right? You don't really know exactly whether he would be doing that before something else gets done. And you will order actions only when ordering is needed because of correctness. Otherwise, you won't. Now, in this case, the only ordering that you need is since this guy is giving something to this guy, it better come before because causation goes in the forward direction. And since it's not, and since everything has to start, come after the beginning of the plan, it comes in the middle. So it comes after the initial. So now, so there is an ordering here, if I can get my pen. So there is an ordering relation here. And those ordering relations are precedence relations. Initial state precedes this action, this action precedes the final state. Okay? And just a second. And I would also make a connection from here to not clear B. That is this connection. That's my commitment. Okay? Now my question is, yes. It's possible, but you will figure that out. That order must be figured out because, so in a plan, if something is coming before something in a plan, it must either be because the guy who is coming before is providing something to the guy who is coming afterwards, or this guy, if you don't put him here, he would come in between two other guys who are having a nice interaction and is undoing that interaction. So either the reason for you being in a particular relative position is either because you need to be there so that you can give what somebody else needs after you, or because somebody pushed you out of the trouble region. That's about to happen here.
So once you pick up the order four in the beginning,
that particular branch is dead. But there's no magic here. Remember, I started from here. There are a whole bunch of choices here. And I come here, there's a whole bunch of choices here. Now, in fact, if you guys understand what we are doing, Do you really believe that in this problem, the hand empty which is true in the initial state is the one that survives until the goal state? No, there is no, not necessarily, it's dead. And so in fact this plan is dead. I'm just playing with you so that you will realize that it's dead. But this plan is dead. Okay, it turns out that the hand empty must really be given by stack AB. Otherwise it won't work in this problem. But it's something that you understand because you understand this problem right now. You, your head is understanding. But I want the search to figure this out yourself. And so the way it will do is it will go this side, fail, go back to another of the other branches and succeed. Okay? So now in this case, I have a commitment saying, so I'll make this S1, the step, is giving not clear B to S infinity. And I have another commitment saying this guy is giving hand empty here. So it looks as if both commitments are about to hold right now. There is no more commitments required here. Am I done? No. Because this guy, stack AB guy, requires certain things himself. Stack AB requires holding A and clear B. Right? So now you have to, these become new open conditions. Holding A at S1 and clear B at S1. And you work on those now. And what happens is, when you try to, for example, do holding A, you would wind up putting pick up A here, and it will have to come before this action because it's giving something to this. Now this pick up A has a not hand empty effect, which then goes and fills that commitment. It's hard for you to see, but it's very easy for your computer to see. You know, it's because, you know, by this time the picture became, you know, cluttered enough that you may not have realized directly that, oh yeah, yeah, this is, it's not hand empty, this guy requires hand empty, is a problem. But for the computer, all that, the algorithm, all that it matters is, it remembers all the commitments. Okay? And the three commitments it has made till now are, commitment one is, this guy is giving hand empty here, commitment two is, this guy is giving not clear B here, commitment three is that this guy is giving holding A to this guy. Now any time it introduces new actions, it checks to see that all the commitments are still satisfied. And if a commitment is not satisfied, then you say there is an unsafe link, an unsafe commitment. When there is an unsafe commitment, you try to work out that unsafeness out of the system. So if somebody is giving something to this other guy, okay, and another step is coming in between and killing what is being given, you, the only thing you can do is either get the step out of the range, the backward, or out of the range to the forward. Or if you are lucky, you know, in certain cases, which doesn't happen in this kind of problem, you can ask the step not to do that. You stare at the step and say, thou shalt not do it. And it turns out that's called confrontation. For these kinds of actions, it won't happen. But so all you can do when there is a problem with unsafe link is you promote the step to come out of the conflicting region or demote it to come out of the conflicting region. How many of you know about transaction serialization in databases? That's exactly what you do there. When you do transaction serialization, you make sure that, you know, basically if there's a conflict, you get things out of the conflicting region. Okay? So in this case, I can remove this conflict either by putting pickup A before the initial state or after the stack AB. Those are the two choices I have. Would either of them work? No, because nobody can come before initial state. That will give you an ordering circularity. And similarly, pickup A can't come before as well as after stack AB, because already pickup A has to come before stack AB because it's giving something to stack AB. And if it comes after stack AB, then there will be a circle, cycle in the order. So there were two ways I could have resolved it. Both of them fail, and so what do? I say this branch dies. So I will then slowly creep my way back up the search tree and find other branches. This is called partial order planning. And I unfortunately had to explain it on the board. I'll put in some slides and you should look at the textbook, but you really have to just see it once and do it yourself. Okay? And understand that underneath the possible baroqueness of this picture, this is a pretty natural way to do planning. I never thought of people who actually do in normal real life, in the human, if you ask them, and of course psychology is the worst form, introspection is the worst form of psychology, that's what they say. So you shouldn't really ask people what do you do, and then they'll give you all sorts of wrong answers. But if you try to do, think about how you do planning, what you might be doing is more likely this. That is, various people are in charge of various things, and I'll make sure that they won't get into each other's way. Then starting from the initial state, then go to the goal state, and vice versa. But doing this in an algorithmic fashion makes the algorithm look reasonably ugly, but it's actually a smart idea. Now, my question is, which is better? Partial order planning? Regression planning? Progression planning? The answer is, whoever has the richest uncle, whichever search can get very good heuristics to guide it, those are the ones that will win. Okay? So that will get us back into where we wanted to be before I made this digression, which is, what should the heuristics be telling for different kinds of search, for the searches? Okay? So let's, for now, having talked about partial order planning, I'll remove this. Are there any questions on the partial order planning? Unless you have figured this out before, you have to go back and read the text after having said this, after having heard me. Okay? There are enough small details, all of which make sense, but it's easy to get confused the first time reading. So you heard it once, so you should go back and read it. I think of partial order planning as the AVL tree. Okay, so AVL trees are the height balance trees are somewhat more painful to explain in the class, but they're pretty darn good idea. Okay, so just because the algorithm is somewhat harder to understand doesn't mean that it's a bad idea. Okay, progression search algorithm is no-brainer to understand. Regression slightly more brains to understand, and partial ordering seems like it requires somewhat more. Okay. Now the question is, if I'm just considering progression and regression type of searches, so I'm going from progression, I have various states in the states in my tree. The question is, what should my heuristic be telling me? It should be telling me how far is this state from the goal state. Now progression knows that whatever state has been produced is reachable from the initial state. It just doesn't know whether there is a path from there to the goal state. Regression, on the other hand, knows that whatever has been produced is reachable in the backward direction from the goal state, but it doesn't know whether it will ever earth itself into the initial state. For both of these, really, the heuristic has to kind of do reachability analysis, where the word reachability means what can be reached from the place where I am.
But
yes, sir.
But in regression, you always have all the records of your past.
I understand.
When you go forward, you keep track of all the states.
Yes. So you're talking about the parent node business in the nodes? Is that what you're saying? I mean, everybody has the path information. Each node knows how you got to it from the previous node.
Okay.
But that's just the search details. This is a very good point to understand. I have not changed my description of A star search or depth first search or the IDDFS or IDA star. The only thing I changed is my description of child generator function, for which I have not made any commitment. in talking about normal search. I always said child generator is a black box. Now I'm going into the black box and telling you that you can have a generic progression child generator function, you can have a generic regression child generator function, you can have a generic partial order planner child generator function. Everything else that you know about search remains. It's very important. You know, it takes a while to kind of get that abstraction into your head. Everything you learned about search still holds. All I change is the child generator function. Okay? So all I'm finally interested in figuring out is how far is this state from here, or how far is this state from here, which is sort of reachability. Okay? And in particular, the words you can use also are something called relevance, which essentially means in the progression, you know that the state is actually reachable from the initial state, but you don't know whether it's relevant. That means there is a path from there to the goal state. In regression, you know it's a relevant state because you started from the goals, but you don't know whether it's reachable. And so really, what you need in doing heuristics is you need to estimate relevance and reachability. Now it turns out that relevance and reachability are just two sides of the same coin. Okay, if you start from the goal state, then the reachability from the goal state is relevant. Okay? And so ultimately all we are trying to figure out in these kinds of scenarios is, given a state, how far is this state to another state? Okay? Let me do this. This would be a good place to sort of motivate what happens next. So a dumb idea for doing this is actually worth thinking of. Here is a way of doing reachability. Okay, so I remember that I wanted to start from a state and figure out how far, what is the distance from that to the goal state. One dumb idea is to do progression from that state until you reach a state that reaches the goal state, and then you know exact distance from the current state to the goal state. So you're trying to estimate the distance, and a good way of estimating is actually to do it. Okay, and you may think this is funny. Day before yesterday, my son was doing estimations. You know, they told him in the school that, you know, these sums, first do the sum and also estimate to see whether it's correct or wrong. And he got this great idea that to get the estimate close to the real one, you should do the real one first and then just remove 10 or 20 from that. And that would be a good estimate. Okay? So an idea is that, you know, if what you're doing is estimation, let's do this whole thing and then take a 5 or 6 off, and that would be an estimate. But it's a good place to start because you should know the dumb idea. Okay? Now, what's interesting is, so for example, any state which is at this level is 1, 2 actions away from this state. And any state which is at this level would be 3 actions away from this state. So if I can compute this progression tree, I would be in good business. But if I compute this progression tree for every state, then it's like essentially doing the entire search for every state separately. I'm not doing estimate. The question is, can I do this cheaper? Here is a way of doing this cheaper. Okay? This structure here, in essence, says, here there was a branch for A1, a branch for A2, a branch for A3, separately, different actions. All this structure thinks is all of them can be done at the same time. And that the state that comes here is really a union of all these states. If you just understand this structure, just look at the visual point of the structure here, which is this you understand. This one has, instead of multiple branches, it has all the actions in the same place. And then instead of different states, you just have one big state-like thing. I'll call it proposition list, where it lists everything that's present in the union of the states above. This is called progression tree, this is called planning graph. I'll get back to how to construct it later. But there is a very important property here, which is that everything that's present here will be present here. So if I'm trying to see whether something is reachable from the initial state in two levels, and two actions, I'll come to the second level and see if that thing is present. If it's present, then If it's not present, if it's not present, then I know it can't be reached in two steps. If it is present, I know that it would take at least two steps to reach it. What did I just tell you? Lower estimate. If it's not present, definitely you can't reach it in two steps. But if it is present, then it's at least two steps to reach it. So the presence of literals in this structure will be, this is called a level heuristic, that will give you a lower bound on how far, how costly is it to reach that particular goal. Now the question of course is this easier to do compared to this? Not the way I've shown it. The way I've shown it, I drew this and I drew this. If I have to draw this to draw this, then you're doing what my son did, which is compute the actual progression tree and then kind of mess it up. Now it turns out that you can construct this directly yourself. All you do is you start from the state, put all the actions, ignore the fact that some actions can't live together because one guy requires a precondition that's being deleted by another guy. Just ignore those, all those problems. Act as if everybody is happily coexisting and put everybody's access in the next level. And everybody who's present here also is taken to the next level. And you put links between an action and its effect in the next level. And then so you get a new super state here. You put all the actions that whose preconditions are satisfied here, put their effects in the next level. You are ignoring the interaction interactions and you're just going forward. It turns out that that structure can be done in linear time, whereas this structure is exponential time. And using that structure as the basis for heuristics makes a huge difference for our planners. And we'll talk more about the details of this when it comes back.